Good morning, Ohio Valley. This is Dan Lima with OSU Extension in Belmont County.
And this is Karen Cox with WVU Extension in Ohio County. I hope you've all had a wonderful weekend and your Sunday is starting off nice and dry. We could really use some dry. I don't care how long it's dry. I'm looking forward to a dry fall. How about you, Dan?
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure everyone else is, too. There's just been... Even, you know, we were just talking about how we do nothing but talk about the rain. But, you know, even the farm and dairy, no matter what kind of ag news source you get, the rain's affecting everybody. And it's not in a good way. And, it's just definitely having its toll on people.
Yeah, so one of the tolls it's having is it's been really difficult for us to get out there and do weed control. So our crop plants are competing with weeds and in some cases being outcompeted by weeds. We're also seeing some weed seed floating in on the flood soil or flood waters. And so we're going to have some serious weed management to deal with. And so we wanted to try to give you a couple alternative options for weed management besides spraying, since you can't spray when it's raining. So one of the things that we had just talked about was trying to either mow them or cover them. So you can mow them down and or try to crimp them if you have a crimper and you can fit it between your rows. Or you can use some plastic mulch to smother them. Or, I mean, really, you can cover them with just about anything you can find. Anything makes a decent mulch. You can use shredded newspaper. You can use unshredded newspaper. You can use plastic. Maybe some old hay bale plastic that you have laying around the farm can be run between the rows. You just have to make sure that these are things that aren't going to tear up your equipment whenever you can get your heavy equipment back in the fields, because you really do want to keep that heavy equipment out of the fields as much as possible to avoid soil compaction. That soil compaction is going to affect you for like 7 years after running it out there one time in this soggy soil. So you want to make sure that you're avoiding soil compaction, even if it means you've got to get out there by hand and roll some plastic down those aisles.
Yeah, you know, a friend of mine from Morgan County, Chris Penrose, he's been in Extension for a long time, very knowledgeable guy, he has beef cattle. I don't remember how large his operation is, but you know, it's a smaller one and smaller side of things, but he puts it in perspective too. He says, even though we're having all these issues with baling hay and moisture levels and weeds and being able to spray and getting equipment out there, we could be having a drought. You know, and he was referring back to 2012 when we had a really bad drought. And typically, you know, it is around this time of year. Usually when it hits, it's in July. And it can be very devastating, too. So be careful what you wish for sometimes, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure California is not too thrilled right now with their lack of rain, and they would absolutely adore our rain. And so we would love to send them some. So if the powers that be would listen to our pleas to send some of our rain to the western states so they can get their crops into or growing well.
Yes. Right, right. So, it's just, you know, you have to deal with it differently. And that's the thing about agriculture is you can manipulate your environment to a certain extent, but not 100%.
So one of the other things that comes with all these storms that we've been having is we've had a lot of tree falls, too. And so you got to make sure, even when it's out, it's nasty out, you got to get out in those fields, check your fence lines, check for broken fences, and also check for toxic weeds that might have fallen over your fences. Keep your eye out for that black cherry, the black walnut, anything that your animals could eat and could make them sick. And there's lots of trees out there that can make our animals sick. And one of the highest risk trees out there is Ohio buckeye or our horse chestnut. The toxic parts include the young shoots, the leaves, and the mature seeds, and they affect the toxins affect all animals. So I'll go back to the buckeye being a useless nut again, and I'll let Dan take our next species.
All right. Thank you for that wonderful lead in, Karen. Okay, but that is true. If you're looking at the highest risk for livestock toxicity. The Ohio buckeye is a very toxic nut, and all the parts of the tree. Not a good plant to have around the pasture at all. And you have to think in terms of livestock. Just they'll avoid it until they can't avoid it any longer. So just because, you know, it's been there, hasn't done any harm, no big deal. That's not the way you should think, because if you ever get in a point where the grass isn't growing well, the animals are now a little bit less picky. They can't eat stuff that's toxic to them, and they could die. So something else that you need to watch out for is the mountain laurel, the rhododendron. And again, very, very toxic to cattle, goats, and sheep especially. And all the parts of the plants are toxic. So, the mountain laurel, the rhododendron, and the Ohio buckeye, very toxic trees. Another one that's kind of most common that's out there all the time is, what is it, Karen?
That would be our ever-popular red maple. Red maple is a great rejuvenating species for it comes in quick, it grows fast, but it can be toxic. This is mostly for horses. If the leaves fall or they get wilted, sort of like the black cherries, once they're wilted, then they can be toxic to horses. So watch the red maple, too, and that's a harder one because they grow everywhere. It's one of our native species, and it's very well acclimated to our climate.
Right. And then you hit on the next one, the black cherry. That's another one, especially the wilted leaves of the black cherry. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. You could think you're going to be ahead of it and rake the leaves. Don't let the animals get it. But sometimes you just can't get out there. And again, when times are hard, the animals will graze it and they will become sick. So wilted black cherry leaves are going to be toxic to pretty much all livestock. So just watch out for that. And one of the other, there's five major toxic plants. The last one on our list here is the yew bush, also known as taxus. And it's very common landscaping shrub. And, you know, you might know it's poisonous, but maybe your neighbor doesn't. I have heard terrible stories where, you know, the neighbor is just thinking that they're helping out the goats and their neighbor's property, and they'll do some trimming and take that fresh, delicious plant over, throw it over the fence, and you have a bunch of dead goats. So just be aware of that. If you do have neighbors that have the yew bush, I don't know, it might be something to bring up in conversation. In the case that I'm thinking about, it was an accident. It wasn't meant, it wasn't intentional. But again, you need to be aware of your surroundings and do what you can to prevent any accidents like that.
Yeah, and that's just with the way development is moving. We have more and more people living in rural areas that have never been in a rural area before. And so it is really good to educate your new neighbors about different things on the farm, just to let them know, you know, please don't toss any random tree branches over the fence to my animals. This is something that can make my animals sick. This is something you can do for my animals, because, you know, people do like animals and they do like to have those relationships. But you have to make sure that they really understand the issues of biosecurity and the issues of plant toxicity that you have to deal with on a regular basis on your farm. So what are some other plants that we need to be looking out for, Dan?
All right, Karen. Well, we just covered the five worst ones, the five highest risk ones, which were the buckeye, the mountain laurel, the red maple, the black cherry, and the yew bush. So the next group is going to be moderate risk. Still poisonous, but not nearly as important as those five. So definitely remember the first five that we talked about. So castor bean, all parts of that plant are going to be toxic. And horses are going to be the most susceptible. But again, it'll affect all animals. And you have to also take into account that an animal will eat 3% of its body weight. So if it has, depending on how much it ingests, how much is available, could make all the difference. Another popular one that I see out there a lot, especially down around pond areas and stream banks, and wetlands, right? Because we don't want to destroy the wetlands, but we should be aware that horsetail, which is a nice wetland, I want to say it's a native species, isn't it?
Gotta check the scientific name here. Hold on. I believe so, yeah.
Well, either way, it's one of those wetland plants that are very popular. Just be aware that, again, when times are getting kind of hard and your animals are grazing around like some kind of wetland area, just maybe it would be a good idea to throw a hay bale in there. So, you know, if you see them kind of venture that direction, you're not getting a lot of forage growth. Just kind of keep those things in mind. So the horsetail is going to be a toxic plant. Another one that's another nice, strong American tree is the oak tree. So with oak trees, the acorns and the young leaves and shoots, leaves, young sprouts, and acorns are definitely going to be toxic. And primary risk are going to be cattle. So again, the oak tree, very nice tree to have around. Just be aware that, again, you know, if things are starting to get, if you have a lot of oak somewhere, you're doing some intensive management grazing, and you got, let's say you have a pasture that's really high in oak trees and not a lot of forage, and the forage is getting low, be aware of that. It might be a time to move or, again, feed hay.
And this is also something to consider when you are considering doing an agroforestry venture where you're going to have animals grazing in your woodlot. There are a lot of things to take into account, and that is, you know, especially there are a lot of plants that grow in a woodland area that can be toxic to your livestock. So keep that in mind if you're considering doing an agroforestry venture, and make sure that you get all the facts involved to make sure that you are going to get the end result that you're looking for.
And another one that I would think that would be a little bit more toxic, but it's in the moderate category, is the poison hemlock. All of that plant's going to be toxic to all livestock. So poison hemlock, that one, at least it's a given by the name. So watch out for that one.
And so poison hemlock's actually becoming more of an issue as it moves westward or eastward into places that it usually isn't found. The poison hemlock looks a lot like Queen Anne's lace. The way you tell the difference is mostly by looking at the stem. When you find purple speckles on the stem of the Queen Anne's lace that you think you're picking, I suggest you put it down and go wash your hands because it is toxic to humans and it can be absorbed through the skin. So make sure that you are being careful when you're out there picking wildflowers, and especially for children who would be more likely not only to pick those plants, but then to put their hands in their mouths. So do make sure that you are keeping an eye for those ditches and roadways where the Queen Anne's lace grows, because a lot of that Queen Anne's lace is actually poison hemlock.
You know, and then another plant that's actually not on here that's kind of a newly emerging weed in the area that we've been having some issues with livestock is the buttercup. So, the buttercup is it's a yellow flower. Sometimes from a distance, it might kind of look like bird's foot trefoil because it has that yellow flower. Just be careful with that, because if it's buttercup and animal, because the animals will eat bird's foot trefoil, but buttercup is a toxin. If you have a pasture field that is heavily infested with it, a lot of times if it dries, my understanding is that it's not nearly as big of an issue as if an animal's actually grazing. So actually, Karen just pointed out that it's on there. It's on my sheet. I just thought
we're getting there.
I'm thinking about pasture weeds and things that are causing concern. But yeah, buttercup is on there, and it's toxic, especially in the in a pasture setting where they're eating the fresh plant.
All right, so something else that actually isn't on the list here is giant hogweed. That's another weed that is coming across, moving eastward. It was big in Indiana when I was out there, and now it's coming our way. It is very easily confused with cow parsnip. The leaves are a little bigger, and the flower stalks are a little taller. But if you, I do recommend that you look it up. and pay good attention because it is what's called a phototoxin. And basically what that means is the sap gets on your skin, but it's not going to cause a reaction until it's exposed to sunlight. And once it's exposed to sunlight, then you get really basically burns, like third degree burns, giant blisters, and it's very painful. So do make sure that you read up on giant hogweed, learn to identify it, and make sure that if you do find it in your field, you handle it with care. Do not let it touch your skin in any way. And if you do, do it on a cloudy day and then wash completely.
Right. And then that's a human toxin as opposed to an animal toxin, right?
That's correct.
All right. So animals don't care. No, I don't know. It might affect animals. I'm not sure. So here's something that people get confused a lot. So the black locust, if you're thinking about the tree, the black locust, very nice looking tree. It can be toxic to cattle and sheep and horses, which essentially is all livestock. Sometimes they say all animals, sometimes they name them exactly. But if you think about having a lot of black locust, the inner bark, the young shoots, so just that fresh, the fresh growth on there, leaves, flowers, the pods they produce in the seed, for the black locust is going to be a toxic plant. And that one's going to be maybe not one of the highest risks that you can have, but again, when times get hard on the animals, they might eat enough to make them toxic. And one of the things that a lot of times I've seen that people get confused is that the honey locust is not a toxic plant. And the honey locust is a
family.
It's a different family.
Mm-hmm.
All right, different family.
Robina pseudoacacia is black locust, and honey locust is Gladitsa trichanthos.
Wow. We have Linnaeus over here with us. But, you know, that's a great point, Karen, because it brings up the fact that you can't always go on common names. A lot of times the common names will be really deceiving, and you're getting completely different species. So black locust is going to be toxic, but the honey locust is also a legume. And it actually will add nitrogen, and it makes those pods. And from my understanding, is a lot of livestock really like to eat those too. I know I was reading Bill Murphy, Greener Pastures on Your Side of the Field, just great book on management intensive grazing, and he has a lot of really good ideas. One of the things that he says is it's really good to have trees on a pasture field, but you don't want it to be more than 30%. So going to about 30% shade and having a good bit of distance between the trees is good because the animals don't want to stay out in the sun. You're able to get more, you're going to get better paddock usage if you have some kind of shade for your animals in the hot summer sun. And something like a honey locust tree that can provide that extra nitrogen that creates these seed pods that are actually liked by a lot of livestock. I personally think it's a nice tree. It's a different kind of tree, and it has a lot of very good ecological properties to it, like putting that extra nitrogen. On top of that, you'll have the animals, and if you haven't distributed enough, the thought process, the animals will lounge in those areas, deposit manure, but if you have it spread enough in your pasture, you will get pretty good manure distribution on top of that.
Just make sure you're out there after a storm. If a big storm has brought down some limbs on honey locust, you're going to be looking at some pretty good-sized thorns that could be affecting your animals. So you got to watch those, too. So as we said earlier, you know, the rain is a blessing, rain versus drought or thorns versus, like, replacing nitrogen. Your nitrogen. So, you know, you got to take the good with the bad, right?
You do. Life is, you know, yeah, life is about choices and making the best choices. And again, you know, everything has a consequence and everything has a flip side. But it's about making the best decision for your practice. You know, thorns might be an issue to some, might not be a big issue to others.
So there's another tree out there that looks a lot like a black locust and a honey locust, but it is the Kentucky coffee tree, and it is toxic to livestock. It's more on the occasional toxicity level. There aren't a whole lot of Kentucky coffee trees. They have pretty specific growing environment requirements, but the leaves, seeds, and pulp of the tree are all toxic, and they will affect cattle, horses, goats, and sheep.
Okay. We are getting a little crazy with this list here, Karen.
Let's do milkweed.
Well, deadly nightshade. You know, the nightshade family has those nice little purple flowers. And I want to say, are they, how many petals? 1, 2, 3, 4? I can't remember how many petals, but pretty little purple flowers. And they have a very pointy leaf to them. So the nightshade family is toxic to all livestock, including people stock. Yeah, so that's when it's poisonous across the board. And oh, I think Karen's like tripping over something here, but I think we're all right. We're gonna keep going. So deadly nightshade. You were talking about you're mentioning giant ragweed. Yeah, you got that one in there. All right, black fern. Black fern is one that can be toxic. And the fern specifically is it's kind of a tree that really likes some shaded areas, heavy moisture. So if you're going to be looking for things like, bracken fern, not black fern. Bracken fern. I was trying to, yeah. All right, bracken fern. And it's going, so ferns are plants, there are non-seed producing plants. So they're going to like really low-lying areas, high in humidity, high in moisture. So around stuff, the ferns are actually doing really well right now. A lot of shaded areas, a lot of open areas. And so watch out for the bracken fern in any kind of low-lying area that you have. And again, bracken ferns and horsetails are going to be in those very wet areas. The thing about the fern is that it doesn't produce a seed, so it needs that that water for reproductive purposes. So it kind of it utilizes the water to populate. So it doesn't. It's a gymnosperm. So that's not a gymnosperm. What is it? I don't want to get too in the weeds here. No pun intended. But now is going to be a prime time for ferns to kind of take over really a lot of low-lying areas. So might be a good idea to kind of head down towards like the forested area, very low-lying area, stream banks, and just kind of keep an eye out for those bracken ferns that could be toxic to livestock if you have livestock going in those areas.
Yeah, and another one that you'll see popping up in those moist areas is going to be the pokeweed. Pokeweed's pretty easy to identify, those giant purple berries and that bright red stalk. And all parts of the pokeweed are toxic to cattle, horses, and swine. So if you're pasturing your swine, you got to make sure you watch out for the pokeweed as well.
All right, Karen, I think I'm going to recap our five most deadly toxic plants here, just so everybody will keep those in mind. So again, Ohio buckeye, the mountain laurel, the rhododendrons, red maple, the wild black cherry, and the yew bush are going to be the major toxic plants to livestock. And just keep those in mind. We talked about many of them here, but those are the five that are going to be the most toxic with the least amount of plant material. And again, just because it's a toxic plant's been around for a while, your livestock doesn't bother it, doesn't mean it won't if food gets kind of scarce and it starts to get hungry and there's nothing else for it to eat. That's when things get bad. So the drought that we had in 2012, that was a big deal. We had a lot of poisonings then. So we're running low on time here, but I do want to make sure that you guys are aware of some events that could be coming up. So we are doing a pasture walk on the 23rd of July, which is going to be a Thursday, and it's going to be here in Belmont County, and so please call if you have questions about that. It's a great opportunity to go out and meet some neighbors, talk about these things that we've just been discussing. This one's going to be an interesting pasture walk because this is going to be a farmer who's just now starting beef cattle. He wants about 10 to 15 head of beef cattle, and he wants to do some pasture renovations project. He wants to do a lot of spring development. He has ponds and stream banks, and he's looking ways to keep the manure and the nutrients out of those areas, keep sedimentation down, and he wants to increase his pasture usage through management intensive grazing. And in order to do that, he's going to be doing a lot of spring development in his land. So if that sounds like something that you want to take a part in, to learn more about, it's going to be on the 23rd of July. You can call me at the Extension office for some more details. So this is Dan Lima from OSU Extension in Belmont County. And again, if you are interested in that pasture walk on the 23rd, just give me a call at 740-695-1455, and I'll be happy to share any details I have about that. And again, the ideas that we come up with together, you can take back to your operation. And, you know, worst case scenario is it's a great chance to go get out, get some fresh air, and learn something.
Yeah, and going out on these types of events is always a great learning experience because there's a lot of unanswered questions when you get there, and the best way to learn is to help someone else answer questions. So it's great to share your experience, and also if you're a newer farmer and you're just now thinking about getting things started on your place, then this is a good opportunity to make a connection with someone who's at the same place in their farming operation as you are, and it allows you all to grow together. So I do encourage you all to get out there, learn some new things, and try something different.
And one last plug-in that I want to talk about is that we are having Barb Letcher on the 27th. That's going to be the following Monday, and that's going to be a really Barb Letcher is the state ODA the head bee person that regulates the apiaries in the state, and she can answer a lot of questions about regulations for pollinators that we have, at least in Ohio, but you're welcome to come from West Virginia, from any part of the state. But Barb Letcher will be there to give a talk, and it's going to be down in Monroe County. So even if you have an interest in pollinators and bees, give me a call, and I will give you those details. So I want to thank you all for listening, and hopefully things are getting better, and things are hopefully starting to dry up, and we're able to get out there and do a lot of good work. So this is Dan Lima with OSU Extension in Belmont County. You can call me at 740-695-1455.
And this is Karen Cox from West Virginia University Extension in Ohio County, and you can reach me at 304-234-3673. Have a great week and a productive one.